today, as markets melt upwards, are things falling apart? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and in Australia, and we cover commodities and crypto along the way. US markets were closed on Friday, of course, thanks to the July 4th Independence Day celebrations. Both the S&P 500 and NASDAQ composite closed at record highs on Thursday, although futures slid the day after. The Dow also rallied on Thursday, and on Friday, the Pan-European Stock 600 Index closed 0.5% lower, clocking a marginal weekly fall. Germany's DAX was down 0.6% and France's CAC 40 lost 0.8%. The ASX 200, though, rose 0.1% to 8,603 on Friday, with 8 of the 11 sectors in the green. The benchmark index posted a weekly gain of 1%. And the global MSCI index hit a new high on Thursday, but eased back just slightly on Friday. So superficially, at least, the market melt-up continues. And the fear index, by the way, was down to 17.48. But now, I do find it a little ironic that America was celebrating its 4th of July holiday, a moment when the nation is supposed to come together after a week that, well, demonstrated just how far apart its citizens appear to be. Following Thursday's close, the House narrowly approved Trump's signature 869-page bill, which averts the near-term prospects of a US government default, but adds trillions to the national debt to fuel spending on border security and the military. Trump has argued that the measures, which included an extension to his 2017 tax cuts and other promised tax reductions, as well as elevated spending on defense and border security, will fuel economic growth. He told reporters that the bill will now put the US on a rocket ship. But the impact of Trump's sweeping spending bill, the one big beautiful bill overall, is expected to add around $3.4 trillion to the national debt. There will be some wealthy winners, but also poorer poor as a result, as it includes tax cuts that favour wealthier Americans while dialing back the huge social security and health spending required to support older ones. Billionaire investor Ray Dalio noted, "It's clear to me that we're unlikely to change the debt trajectory we're on and avoid the painful consequences. While virtually everyone agrees on the need to address our debt problem in a balanced way, that includes tax increases and cuts to benefits, they also agree that they cannot speak up because politics have become absolutist." But the drop in the S&P 500 stock futures of 0.6% on Friday speaks to the potential near-term challenges for US equities as President Donald Trump's July 9th trade deal deadline approaches. He said his administration will probably start notifying trading partners on Friday of the new US tariffs on their exports effective August 1, while reiterating a preference for simplicity over complicated negotiations 5 days before his deadline for deals. Trump told reporters that about 10 or 12 letters will go out on Friday, with additional letters coming over the next few days. By the 9th, they'll all be covered, Trump added, referring to the 9th of July deadline that he initially set for countries to reach deals with the US to avoid high import duties that he threatened. They'll range in value from maybe 60 or 70% tariffs to 10 and 20% tariffs, he added. Of course, the UK signed up and Vietnam followed on with what looks to be higher than expected tariffs, as the US would place a 20% tariff on Vietnamese exports to the US and a 40% rate on goods deemed transshipped through the nation. That's a reference to the practice whereby components from China and possibly other nations are routed through third countries on their way to the US. US talks with economies from Indonesia and South Korea to the European Union and Switzerland are reaching critical stages where the most contentious issues are being hammered out. Trump's latest threat, which fits his pattern of issuing ultimatums to break any impasses, aligns with earlier statements that some nations won't have a say in their tariff level. The top tier of his new tariff range, if formalised, would be higher than any of the levies that the president initially outlined during his Liberation Day rollout in early April. They varied from 10% baseline tariffs on most economies up to a maximum of 50%. Trump didn't elaborate on which countries would get the tariffs or whether that meant certain goods would be taxed at a higher rate than others. Investors have, of course, seen this show before, as analysts at ING, in a note on July the 4th, said, it's not the first time that the US administration has upped the ante days before a deadline. Just think of the EU and the threat of a 50% tariff just a few weeks ago. Tariffs are typically paid by the importer or an intermediary acting on the importer's behalf, but often it's profit margins or the end consumer that ultimately absorbs much of the cost. The lagged effect of tariffs on inflation has some Federal Reserve officials wary of cutting interest rates. The Fed has held off on lowering rates this year, despite intense pressure from Trump, in part to determine whether tariff-driven price hikes might evolve into more persistent cost of living pressures. Actually, Bloomberg Economics estimates that if all reciprocal tariffs are raised to their threatened level on July the 9th, average duties on US imports would climb to around 20% from close to 3% before Trump's inauguration in January. That would add to growth and inflation risk for the US economy. But here's the question, though. Has the economic impact of tariffs genuinely been less bad so far than just about everybody feared earlier in the year? Or is everything just happening with more of a lag? Actually, the US president has expressed optimism about reaching an agreement with India, but has spoken harshly about the prospects of an accord with Japan, casting Tokyo as a difficult negotiating partner. He intensifies Christmas week, saying that Japan will be forced to pay 30 to 35%, or whatever that number is that we determine. Most investors are probably expecting next week's end to the 90-day delay to April's reciprocal tariffs to come and go without any major drama, but I guess we'll see. As for the economy generally, the jury's out on whether we're still waiting on the worst of the tariff hit. The delay in China's tariff levels probably came just in time to avert a more serious recessionary threat. The latest jobs report certainly didn't point to the bottom falling out of the labour market, though if we're talking about time lags, this is usually the last place economic damage shows up. It's worth remembering that sentiment does remain fragile, and tariffs have clearly taken some of the wind out of the sails of the US economy. But I wonder whether markets have missed a key point. Unlike the period between the 1950s and 70s, when the financial economy was about the same size as the real economy, decades of financialization, where money supply grew faster than gross domestic product, means the financial economy is now somewhere between 6 and 10 times bigger than the real economy. Matt King, a former Citi strategist, argues this transformation has added to the polarization that we are now seeing. The rise of technology, particularly social media and the mobile phone, has coincided with a global mental health epidemic. Increasing loneliness, shorter attention spans, a growing distrust in institutions, increasing shifts in political extremes, and a drift towards autocracy that's exacerbated by weaker economic growth. That's because angry, polarized societies are demanding policy responses that threaten to prevent capital from flowing as freely as it once did and needs to do in our deeply financialized world. So when Trump threatens Powell, chair of the so-called independent Federal Reserve, or Prime Minister Keir Starmer sends bond yields surging when he refused to back his Chancellor Rachel Reeves, who had proposed cuts to welfare spending, or the massive increase in government debt in Germany to pay for defence, or elbow turning to the private sector for growth, having stoked government jobs for years, you wonder if the game is up. One shocking proposal, by the way, is to swap US treasuries held by foreign lenders for 100-year bonds in what would be a de facto default, or the gating and taxing of capital flows, or the new Genius Act that will force issuers of stablecoins to buy more US treasuries. You can't make this stuff up. In a deeply financialized, highly connected world, those policy responses will reverberate around the globe, and the ability of markets to ignore such attacks and or deal with those sudden bouts of volatility that they create will be seriously tested. Losses could well follow. Meantime, in the real world, investors cheered a surprisingly strong jobs report on Thursday, sending all of three of the indices higher in that shortened session. US job growth in June rose above expectations, while the unemployment rate fell, suggesting the labour market is, well, stable. Non-farm payrolls increased by 147,000 jobs in June, after rising 144,000 in May, according to the Labour Department. Economists thought they would see 110,000 last month. The unemployment rate fell to 4.1% in June from 4.2% in the previous month. In contrast, on Wednesday, the ADP National Employment Report showed private payrolls unexpectedly fell in June, the first drop in more than 2 years. But overall, the figures do underline broad resilience in the labour market that, coupled with recently benign inflationary pressures, could persuade Fed policymakers to hold off on cutting borrowing costs the next meeting, which is on July 29th, 30. Meantime, the US dollar index has had its worst first half since 1973, as Trump's chaotic rollout of sweeping tariffs heightened concerns about the US economy and the safety of treasuries, but it has rallied 0.4% on Thursday before retracing some of those gains on Friday. The euro added 0.2% to 1.779, while sterling held steady at 1.3652, as British assets steadied following investor fright over the last 2 days at a tearful appearance by Finance Minister Rachel Reeves in Parliament on Wednesday. The US Treasury bond market was closed on Friday for the holiday, but the 10-year yield was at 4.328%, while the 2-year yield jumped to 3.885%. Gold firmed 0.11% on Friday to $3,346 per ounce, with futures up 1.79% for the week as investors again sought refuge in safe haven assets due to concerns over the US fiscal position and tariffs. Brent crude futures fell to $68.30 a barrel, while US West Texas Intermediate dropped 66 cents to $66.49 as Iran reaffirmed its commitment to nuclear non-proliferation. Trading was thin, though, ahead of the weekend's OPEC Plus meeting, which is expected to result in an increase in oil production. In Europe, markets were down a little on Friday, with the DAX and CAC 40 both a little down, but the UK FTSE all but flat. The German 30-year bond was at 3.082%, while the UK 10-year was at 4.547% after Reeves appeared in a chirpier mood. But we can expect more tax hikes in the UK autumn budget on the back of the U-turn on deciding not to cut some support payments. This welfare reform U-turn was signalling that the Labour Party is a lot less concerned about what the gilt market thinks, said Gordon Shannon, a portfolio manager at 24 Asset Management. I would have thought it was seared into politicians' memories. What happened to Liz Truss? Indeed. The yield on the 10-year government bond, or gilt, rose as much as 22 basis points on the day at one point to 4.681% as investors ditched British debt. It then recovered somewhat to 4.6%. At its peak, the benchmark yield was at its largest one-day jump since October 2022. That's the aftermath of Truss's chaotic package of large, unfunded tax cuts that scuttled her premiership. During the depths of the 22 crisis, the yield on the 10-year gilt rose by 50 basis points in a single day at one point. Sterling dropped around 1% against the dollar and also weakened sharply against the euro, which rose 0.8% to its highest on the pound in 2 months. Finance Minister Reeves also plans to announce a significant overhaul of the United Kingdom's pension system during their upcoming Mansion speech on July the 15th. That's according to the FT. The proposed reforms will include establishing a commission to conduct a comprehensive review of pension adequacy throughout Britain, addressing long-standing concerns about retirement security. Over in Europe, the threat of tariffs is manifesting itself in an unexpected opponent for the European Central Bank, a stronger and more volatile euro. A drumbeat of comments from the ECB officials this week suggests that the euro-US dollar at 120 is a level that they are concerned about. Most Asian stock markets were subdued on Friday, while Hong Kong and South Korea saw steep losses as US President Donald Trump said he would start sending out those letters to trading partners to set new tariff rates by later on Friday. Markets interpreted this as a return to a more aggressive protectionist stance that could disrupt global supply chains and weigh on export-driven economies, many of which, of course, are in Asia. And US Treasury of State Marco Rubio called off his first visit to Japan and South Korea to focus on Middle Eastern issues. Japan's Nikkei newspaper reported on Thursday South Korea's Kospi led losses with a 1.6% slump, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng index dropped 1.2%. Both markets saw broad-based losses on Friday, with chip stocks and auto shares leading losses. Elsewhere, investors stayed on the sidelines ahead of the US tariff decision, leading to marginal moves. China's Shanghai Composite Index and Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 both gained 0.2%. Japan's Nikkei was unchanged, while the TOPIX fell 0.2%. Investor sentiment in China's stock markets has declined significantly due to the absence of expected policy changes and approaching critical dates for tariffs, according to Morgan Stanley. The bank cautioned that markets could face increased volatility in the next month or two, though they maintain a more positive outlook for fund flow momentum over the medium to long term, expecting steady improvement in the 6 to 12 month basis. Foreign branded mobile phone sales in China fell 9.7% year on year in May, according to data released on Friday by the China Academy of Information and Communications Technology, a government-affiliated research company. Apple was among the foreign brands affected, though the CAICT data did not provide specific figures for the company. They showed that shipments of foreign-branded phones in China decreased to 4.54 million handsets compared to the same month last year. The overall mobile phone market in China also saw a decline, with total phone shipments within the country dropping 21.8% year-on-year to 23.72 million handsets in May. And China is planning to offer cash handouts to families as an incentive for couples to have children. That's according to people familiar with the matter, as years of population decline threatens the world's second largest economy. The government is set to provide around 3,600 yuan or $764 a year for each child until they turn three under a nationwide initiative starting from 2025, said the sources. While China abandoned its one-child policy about a decade ago, its population registered a decline for three straight years through to 2024. New births at 9.54 million last year were only half of the 18.8 million registered in 2016, when China lifted the policy that allowed couples to have only one child. Diminishing birth rates is a challenge to the world's second largest economy, where the working age population has been shrinking in a threat to labour supply and productivity. China, which lost its title as the most populous nation to India in 2023, may see its population drop further to 1.3 billion by 2050 and below 800 million by 2100, according to the UN's demographic modelling. Indian stocks were higher, led by gains in oil and gas, real estate and public sector undertakings. The Nifty 50 was 25,461. The Australian share market closed above the key 8,600 point for the first time on record as investors bought retail stocks ahead of an expected interest rate cut by the Reserve Bank next week. The ASX 200 rose 0.1% to 8,630 on Friday, with 80 of the 11 sectors in the green. The benchmark index posted a weekly gain of 1%. ASX tech stocks tracked gains on Wall Street, with Appen up 3.5% to $1.17, Life360 up 1.9% to $33.11, and WiseTech Global up 1.1% to $112.10. Retail stocks also bounced higher as investors positioned for the RBA to cut rates next week. Wesfarmers edged 0.8% higher to $84.37, while Aristocrat jumped 1.4%. Commonwealth Bank, though, dropped 0.9% to $178, despite ANZ, Westpac and National Australia Bank all posting modest gains. CBA has fallen in six of the last seven sessions, and is down 7.2% from its intraday record of $192. This comes ahead of next week's Reserve Bank meeting, where bond traders have all but locked in a rate cut. Rate cuts are not necessarily beneficial for bank earnings, said Merlon Capital partner principal Neil Margalis. They can be supportive of credit growth, but bank margins are typically under pressure if rates are being cut. And obviously the valuation of Australian banks are reasonably high too, so it's not surprising that CBA is taking a breather. Actually, investors don't have to go far to find someone who reckons Commonwealth Bank shares are overpriced. Fund managers have steered clear. Analysts are pretty much all recommending that their clients sell. But what would happen if the country's biggest lender was back to so-called normal valuations? Well, MST Marquee strategist Hassan Tewfik has crunched the numbers and says the ASX 200 would fall around 5%. There have been several drivers of the CBA re-rating, including the rise in the superannuation guarantee and waning desire for Aussie pension funds to add to their international positions, he said. He said the ASX 200 would fall around 460 points if CBA traded on a price-to-earnings multiple of 16 times. That's his historical average. It is currently trading at a price-earnings multiple of around 30 times, and it represents around 12% of the whole market, so it's quite significant. Now, this would have huge implications for both passive investors and international fund managers who flocked to the stock over the past year, partly to diversify away from the volatile US market. The materials sector fell, with BHP dropping 1.4% to $38.73 and Rio Tinto shedding 1.3% to $108.80. Fortescue pushed 0.4% higher, though, to $16.33. In corporate news, Silk Logistics rocketed 23.3% to $2.12 on the news that the ACCC does not oppose DP World Australia's $174 million takeover for the national container services provider. ARB Corporation rose 3.6% to $34.37 after Citi upgraded the car accessories maker to buy from neutral with a price target of $38.70. And G8 Education dropped 3.5% to 96 cents, having fallen every day since it was reported on Tuesday that a former employee had been charged with child-related offences. The Aussie was at 65.551 cents against the US dollar and 48 cents against the UK pound. Over the past 2 days, Bitcoin has shown a steady recovery, climbing at one stage over 110,000 US before falling back to 108,080. Several factors have contributed to Bitcoin's rise: institutional inflows into cryptocurrency exchange traded funds, ETFs, positive statements from US President Donald Trump, and easing regulatory pressure. One of the key drivers of this rise was a sharp increase in investor interest in Bitcoin ETFs. Inflows in recent weeks have reached around $11 billion, with total investments approaching $50 billion. This has exported Bitcoin as an asset class comparable to digital gold. The additional bullish impetus came from the political arena. In his statements, Donald Trump confirmed his support for the cryptocurrency market. His statements have had a positive impact not only on Bitcoin, but on shares of companies related to the crypto industry, such as MicroStrategy and Coinbase. Despite the uptrend, though, data from the futures market shows an increase in the volume of short positions, with open interest rising from $32 billion towards $35 billion. This may indicate possible volatility and the risk of correction, especially if the Bitcoin US dollar breaks below key resistance levels, which actually nicely sums up the risks to the broader markets as the tariff ruckus continues. The risk of volatility and the risk of correction looms large. Massive financialization growth carries significant costs, and, well, this is worth remembering, especially now. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.